This is episode number 775 of the Secret Identity podcast, and today we're going to talk about Marvel making a statement about the upcoming Secret Empire event, and Marvel also joining Comixology Unlimited. Our comics this week will be Big Moose, the one-shot from Archie, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 9, and Rocket Raccoon number 3. And our Out of the Long Box this week is Warlock 5 number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch is denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well, and considering we just had our therapy session, we are ready to talk about comic books.
We do. I'm sure we've told people this before, but our pre-roll, our before-air prep is basically just, it's like the Festivus airing of grievances.
Yes.
That we talk about our lives and everything that is not fantastic about them, and then we take a deep breath.
Yep.
And we start the show, Matthew.
And it was interesting. We were talking before, I think last week we talked a little bit about, we've mentioned this before, anytime we go to comic shows, we are listening to music and talking music. I think we failed to mention the fact that usually when we come back from shows, it's sports.
Yes.
We'll put on sports radio. If we're in New York, we'll put on the Fan and listen to whatever game's on. If it's the Yankees or the Mets, no matter what it is, we'll listen.
Uh-huh.
So that is where we get our bases covered. That's where our happiness is.
Yeah, Thursdays is a quick therapy minute before we start the show. Car rides are for music and then sports in that order.
Yeah, and if any of the stuff that we ever talked about before we record gets recorded, we're living on the streets.
Sometimes I check.
Yes.
And although I don't believe that my wife has ever listened to more than 15 minutes of this podcast, and I think it was the episode where I interviewed Parker when we were at Kids Comic Con. So I think she listened to the actual interview with him, but that was about it.
Oh, there's Parker. I wish that other guy would shut up.
Right. Who are these jerks? Oh, Parker's getting interviewed. That's nice. That's wonderful. Let's talk about the news, Matthew. First off, in our news, Warlock 5, which we're going to talk about in our Out of the Long Box this week. The Kickstarter is going on now for the new edition of Warlock 5. This one is going to be, it's a 2017 reboot written by Cullen Bunn and Jimmy Johnston, illustrated by Jeffrey Edwards, who we recently had on our creator spotlight here on Secret Identity. Colors by Andy Poole, letters by Ed Dukeshire. Now, this is a Kickstarter that's going on right now. You can even get yourself drawn into the actual book if you choose a particular reward tier. But check our link to the show notes and you can see that it's got probably, as you listen to this episode, it's probably got about a week and a half to go. And hopefully as we record this and as you listen to it, they are fully funded now. But go check that out because the Warlock 5 series, as we'll talk about in our Out of the Long Box, very, very cool premise. And in the video for Warlock 5, Cullen Bunn talks about the video for the Kickstarter, how this series was a humongous influence on him. And in case you don't know Cullen Bunn, who I always thought of as the Sixth Gun, that was the book that I always thought of with him. But now I realize he is writing everything now. A few years ago, we were like, man, Charles Soule is everywhere, isn't he? He's writing a book for every company. He's all over the place. I feel like that's Cullen Bunn now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been doing a lot of that. And we talked last week about the writing team on that book is the writing team on Micronauts.
Is it? Okay.
So that is making me want to do this a little bit more and really get excited about it. Not to mention, you and I know the thrill of being drawn into comic books. That is something that you never get tired of. We've been drawn into 3 or 4 books. I carry them around in my briefcase. Those comic books are in my briefcase. Yeah. So if you're ever at a show and you see me and I've got my briefcase, just ask me because I will open it up and show you the Punisher book that your name was in and my name was in, the Jonah Hex book that we were all throughout.
The Big Hero 6
book. The Big Hero 6 one, G-Man, whatever it is. I mean,
the G-Man one is my kids' favorites because they love G-Man.
Yeah.
So that was an actual thrill.
Why are you guys standing behind a guy in a crocodile suit?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the best.
Good stuff. So, yeah, so don't forget about the Warlock 5 Kickstarter. Now let's talk about Marvel a little bit, Matthew, because nobody talks about Marvel these days, right?
No.
Marvel's never in the headlines. A couple interesting things this week, and I wanted to go a little bit because I feel like we've been bagging on Marvel a lot lately, but there is a new story that could be seen in that vein. But then we're going to bring it up with a little positivity, Matthew.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously you know the hullabaloo around the Secret Empire.
Yes, I just read the last issue of Cap to get myself ready for this thing that I don't really care about.
People are not happy about the direction that Cap is being taken in.
Yep.
And apparently they're not happy because, and I'm just going to read a bit here, the news story that I want to talk about is that ABC News on their website put out a statement from Marvel about Secret Empire. Of course, ABC affiliated with Disney, as is Marvel. But that doesn't usually happen.
Mm-mm.
You don't usually see a statement put out, and I'll read the statement in its totality in a second. But for those of you that don't know, what's been happening in Captain America, and this is not even Secret Empire yet, is that he is an agent of Hydra.
Yes, he always has been.
That was at first kind of revealed without a lot of answers like a year ago, right? That was the whole Hail Hydra.
Yep.
We talked about that. I forget what number episode we talked about that in. But since then, people have been very upset. And the thinking all along has been that we're going to find out that this is some cosmic cube nonsense. We're going to find out that this is basically some alternate reality, or this is a Cap from another world or something like that. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Matthew, but what I think that we found out at this point and through the Zero issue of Secret Empire is that, in fact, Cap from our world was always a Hydra agent.
Yes, I have not read the Zero issue yet, but in the last issue, you go right into it with basically him saying, so I've been involved in this all along. Yes, you have been involved in this all along. And you can go everywhere with where you think it's going to go. I have really been kind of thinking about the fact that when you had Steve Rogers' rebirth, when Steve came back from the dead, this is not the Steve Rogers that we knew that came back. So there's my little kind of take in that whole thing.
So people have been very upset, especially some longtime fans of Cap, for obvious reasons about this. Now, what we've heard from Marvel all along is, hey, let the story play out.
Yes.
Which is, I think, in most cases, a very common response to events and to stuff like that, because a lot of times we, as jaded comic book fans, can sort of assume through to the end of something and say, well, it's just all going to get reset at the end, or we're going to find out it was all a dream, or whatever the case may be. And so, but in this case, people have basically said to Marvel, even though you may change it at the end and make everything okay at the end of the day, the idea that you're taking Captain America and you are affiliating him at all with what has been seen as a Nazi organization over the years is disrespectful to the character of Captain America. No matter what the story outcome is, no matter if it turns out he, you know, everything's cool and everything's back to normal, the fact that you've made the character go through this, not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, the statement is, with Marvel Comics' Secret Empire, the forces of Hydra have taken over and, due to the villainous actions of the Red Skull, have manipulated Marvel's greatest hero, Captain America, and forced him to adopt their cause, the statement to ABC News reads. At Marvel, we want to assure all of our fans that we hear your concerns about aligning Captain America with Hydra, and we politely ask you, Matthew, you specifically, to allow the story to unfold before coming to any conclusion. Okay, that's what they're asking you to do. The statement continues that the passion of fans is what keeps the company moving forward, and that Captain America will always be a cornerstone of the Marvel Universe who will stand up for what is right, and Secret Empire will be the biggest challenge Steve has ever faced. What you will see at the end of this journey is that his heart and soul, his core values, not his muscle or his shield, are what saved the day against Hydra and will further prove that our heroes will always stand up against oppression and show that good will always triumph over evil.
So they basically just told you what's going to happen at the end.
Which is pretty interesting, because in order for them to do that, they had to be pretty concerned about the feedback that has been given so far.
And it's interesting. I don't think that with all of the attacks and the press that Nick Spencer has gotten and Marvel's getting for this one, nobody is as big a Cap fan as I am. I have been reading Cap since 1975. He has been my favorite superhero this entire time. When I'm reading something that I don't enjoy, I almost can just pass. I guess maybe I'm different. I just read it. Like, I thought this story arc so far has been interesting. I kind of like the twists. However, I can always just go back and read some old Caps and get right back to where he should be. I don't like Captain America's uniform right now. I want the wings on the head. I want classic Cap. They're not going to give it to me. And until they do, I'll just go back and read Cap 207 to 215 and get what I want out of Captain America. I can go back and read the Invaders. I really will just let this story tell itself. But again, that whole thing, it's like, hey, you know what? We're going to ask you to spend some money, invest some emotion, but it's all going to work out in the end. Cap will always stand for his right. core values.
Hey, don't worry. Everything's going to be cool. Everything will go back to normal at the end of it. Just chill out and please stop saying that Captain America is a Nazi. I feel like that's what the last part of Marvel's statement should have been. If you guys could please just like on social media and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff, just please, for the love of Pete, stop saying that Captain America is a Nazi. You're really killing us with that one.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that's where they're trying to get ahead of that. But it seems to me like this almost is like a move where Disney told Marvel,
yeah,
get out there and say something. Because we don't like the heat that's coming off of this. Because, again, as we talked about a few – I feel like this is a part of the longer narrative that we've talked about a few weeks ago. Disney does not care about comic books.
Yes.
Unless comic books cause a problem for Disney.
Yes.
This is – I feel like the Disney reps walked into the Marvel offices and said, you guys, remember how we said do whatever stupid nonsense you want to do with your comic books because all we care about is the movie stuff and the TV stuff? Just don't cause us any problems. You're causing us some problems.
Think about the kid who's got to wear the Cap costume walking around Disney now.
Right.
You know, you're getting your assignments. Hey, Sue, you're Miss Marvel. Go get him. Hey, Bobby, Spider-Man costume. Do it
proud.
Yeah,
Spider-Man, my
Taylor,
favorite.
You're Captain America. What the heck? Well, you were late six times
exactly.
last week. And
you missed the team meeting at the beginning of the week.
So you are Cap.
Yep.
Don't forget to wear your cup because you're going to get kicked a lot.
Yep. You're Cap now.
Yep, enjoy it. Yeah, we said you wanted to be Captain America. Well, it was 2 years ago.
Right.
You know, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and then just the whole thing about, like, they're sending a bunch of stuff to comic book shops so that they can redo, like, their comic book shop with the whole Hydra's taking over sort of thing. And a lot of comic shops are like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it is so sad. It literally is like saying, hey, football fans – you know, granted, your team – like, if we knew beforehand, hey, Patriot fans, you guys suck right now, first, second, third quarter, but don't worry. You guys are going to win at the end. Great. Thanks for telling me. Now I don't even have to watch.
Right.
It's a lot like that. Just
yeah. It's a little bit self-defeating, but also I think shows you how in sort of damage control mode they are at this point in time, right? So I'm not going to be picking up Secret Empire, but I know as a Cap fan, you'll probably be picking that up. So – we will be talking about at least some of that here. In more positive Marvel news, Marvel is really jumping on board now with Comixology and Amazon because it was announced, I think, in the last week or so.
Two days ago.
There is a bunch of books that are now part of the Comixology Unlimited. So if you pay the $6 a month fee like I do in order to read a bunch of stuff from a ton of publishers, there's Valiant stuff on there, there's Boom stuff on there, there's a ton of different publishers, tons of indie books. For $6 a month, you get to read at least the first volume of most of that stuff. And Marvel has just dumped like 40 new graphic novels into the Unlimited pool. But they're also doing the Kindle Unlimited, which is if you pay to have unlimited reading on your Kindle, there are additional books that are going into that collection. And there's a new service called Prime Reading. Which is similar to Kindle Unlimited, but it's more curated, almost like Comixology Unlimited. Like it's a select number of titles, a smaller number of titles that are available to Prime subscribers in general that you'll be able to access. So there's sort of three different levels of reading packages that you can get through Amazon. The Prime Reading one you just get automatically if you're a Prime member. Comixology is extra and the Kindle Unlimited is extra. But in any case, Marvel has now dumped a whole bunch of their graphic novels and even some stuff that's a little bit more recent into that pool of that stuff. So they fully jumped in, which I think is interesting because Marvel still has, to my knowledge, the Marvel Unlimited subscription, where you can dive into their back issues. And DC and Dark Horse, most of those companies have their digital storefronts now, where you can go through their app or their sort of thing. But clearly they've seen the writing on the wall and are now starting to all get in with Amazon, because Comixology has a humongous user base.
Yes.
And then if you throw in the amount of Kindle owners or Prime subscribers mm-hmm. on top of that, you are truly opening yourself up to a humongous potential audience.
Yeah. I think it was last Tuesday or Wednesday, I had one of the managers come up and say, "Hey, is this good?" And I'm thinking, "What are you asking me for?" And then I read what it was. I'm like, "Holy cow, this is huge." So this was we knew about this a few days ago, or whenever we're recording. And when the big announcement came out, everybody again was coming up going, "Is this a big deal to have Marvel back catalog on Amazon?" And I'm like, "Absolutely, because now you're going to get all those people that want to read some of the old stuff." And somebody like me, I'm looking at it, and I'm still not doing Comixology. I'm now, but this is now making me want to more and more get into it. It's if I was 80% convinced a little while ago to jump on Comixology, I'm now about 98%.
I think when it's done right, it can actually feed print sales.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So like if you get the first issue or the first couple issues of something for a discounted price or even through the free stuff that you can get on Comixology, and I like it, if it's a good enough story and it really grabs me, historically, I have then gone and gotten it in print.
Yes.
Now, I'm trying to move away from print, but I view print now as almost like a special edition sort of thing. And that's kind of the same way that I treat it with books. Like I will buy a hardcover version of a book that I really like, even if I've already read it 15 times mm-hmm. or something like that. And it's the same thing kind of with CDs and stuff like that. So I will buy hard copies of stuff that I really, really, really love. And with these types of services, I'm sampling a lot more than I ever would without them. But for Marvel, to me, it's like if you want people to get interested in some of these characters, like you're going to see Guardians of the Galaxy this weekend, Volume 2. There's going to be a ton of cameos
yes.
from cosmic characters that somebody in the theater is going to be shouting, "Oh, that's so-and-so," or "Oh, that's so-and-so," or like to be able to then go back and read some of this stuff. There, I hope that they are going to curate it in a way that brings people to these kinds of properties. You know what I mean?
And I know that Amazon, or I should say Comixology, has been doing things where you go on and one day it'll be – I remember Cullen Bunn was the
– creator of the day or whatever.
Creator of the
month
or something, or for the week, where you could get his stuff, everything he did at half price.
Yep.
And they do a lot of that stuff. I know that when Flash returned – when Flash was coming back for the second part of the third season, "Hey, Flash is back. Don't forget to catch up on some essential Flash reading," and they'll give you a list
yep.
of some of the stuff to read. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm really getting attracted to.
Yes, I like the curation stuff, and I like it because with digital, you have the capability of making more available to your readers than in print, right? Because
yep.
with the digital stuff, you can say, "Hey, we're going to go back 20 years and bring this series that's completely out of print back, even just for a limited time or whatever, digitally, and here you mm-hmm. go and check this kind of stuff out." So I think that's exciting news. I think any way that we can expand the market for comics or expand the audience for comics is a good thing.
And so, any time that we can make my stock go up better and
right,
more.
Right, and you being perfect. Our Amazon employee. So take all that with a grain of salt
yes.
because obviously we're biased. Although I'm not on Team Amazon yet, but who knows?
We'll get you there.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Maybe this is my audition. So, all right, Matthew, it's about time for us to talk about comics. But before we talk about comics, we have to talk about beards.
I want to talk about that thing on your face right now because that is awesome.
So for those of you who have not been listening, I grow my beard every year from like fall through the April, May period of time. And then I usually shave it down to just like if you're using the clippers, like a number two,
mm-hmm.
you know, shave it all down. And I let that be that way for the summer. But this year I did something different, Matthew. This past weekend when I got my hair cut, I decided I am going to shave my beard. But instead of shaving it down and just having it be, you know, what your average beard looks like,
yep.
you know, the kind of stubbly sort of thing, I said, I'm shaving the sides completely clean for the first time in years.
Yes.
But I'm going to keep the goatee super, super long. So those of you who are heavy metal fans out there, I went with the Kerry King.
Yep.
I went with the goatee that just continues on down. almost like a Scott Ian, but a full goatee. Scott Ian just does the chin stuff.
Yeah, Scott has the chin, and like the chin is all shaved.
But that's what I'm going for the full effect with that. So I didn't, because you know, much like when I cut my hair in high school, when I had long hair, and it never grew back again, because as I was graduating high school, I started, you know, losing my hair, thanks to my. What is it? Your mother's
father? They say it's your mother's, but it's not a science.
Thanks to Grandpa for that. So I've never been able to grow my hair long again. But the beard I can grow. Yeah. And I remember last year after I cut it, I felt bad that I had wasted all that work, you know, growing that beard. And so this year I decided to keep a little bit of the length and do something different. And so now I am using the beard balm.
Yes.
From Viking Oils, as well as the beard oil. So it's brought a whole new element into the mix. Even though I have less of a beard now in some areas, I'm using more product for what I have now.
And I was using the beard balm this week. I trimmed up a ton, but I got the goatee going, and really liking where with the Viking oil stuff, because with the beard balm, it makes it feel thicker and you feel good when you put it on. It does make you feel better. You can kind of mold it, and even, you know, you don't think about this, and ladies, you might not understand this part of the whole beard thing, but it doesn't just grow. It grows in whatever direction it wants to. So like a cowlick in your hair, you've got to kind of mold it, and I've got a few spots that I really have to work on when it gets longer, and that's like my mousse.
There you go. VikingOilsLLC.com is the website that you want to go to, and of course, they have seasonal products as well, so I'm sure we're into the spring-summer line at this particular point in time. So that's our pitch for beard care products, Matthew. Now we're going to jump right into comic books, and you are going to start us off today with an Archie one-shot.
Yes, they are starting to do a couple of these. They have the Archies. The band is going to have a one-shot coming out pretty soon. We've had Archies and the Ramones. So this is not a new thing, and this is, I think, really exciting to get a lot of these characters out there to really start developing backstories and give you a better idea, especially if you're watching Riverdale. You get to see who some of these characters are. Now, the moose that we're going to see here in Big Moose, the one-shot, is not much like the moose we see in the TV series because, first of all, we don't have Midge, and this is Midge crazy.
I know. I wonder why we don't have Midge in Riverdale. I'm assuming at some point we will.
I'm hoping so. Now, Moose on the show obviously is, you know, kind of confused about his sexuality.
Yep.
But that does not mean we can't have Midge. I mean, Midge has always been my favorite. I love Midge. Cannot wait to get her introduced to the show. And I think we've got two episodes left before the season ends. So we're going to have to wait for a season two. So this double size issue, it is $3.99, and you get three stories in here: Moose versus the Vending Machine, Have It All, and The Big Difference. And the first one, Sean Ryan is the writer. Corey Smith is the artist. And Moose is sitting there in class, and his stomach is growling. And he's looking at the clock, and he cannot control the fact that he is so hungry. He's not even listening to what the teacher is talking about. So whatever the teacher writes on the board, all he does is see food. And whenever the teacher is talking, all he hears is food terms. So as the bell finally rings, he bolts out of the room. And for a full page, you see him running down to the vending machine. He finally gets there, and then he's like, yes, that's what I want. And he opens up his pockets. And he's got a dinosaur sticker, a penny, a button, some keys, dice, and a paperclip. No money. No money to pay for his snack. And he's looking at the glass and inside, and there's a great shot of from the inside the vending machine where he's pushed up against the glass. And he's like, no, 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 no. And his stomach is growling, and then he goes, Midge. And he runs over and sees Midge, and she's like, oh, my moose burger, how you doing? And he's like, oh, hey, great. I need some money for the vending machine. So she's like, look, I don't want to give you the money for the vending machine because, first of all, you ate like a pig at lunch, and we're going out for a special dinner tonight, and I do not want you to miss it or be full. So I'm going to say no. I love you to death and can't wait to see you later, and walks away. So he's very upset. His stomach starts growling even more. And lo and behold, over on the side, you've got Jughead, who's looking over there going, hey, Moose, you know, see what's going on. You got your shoulders slumped and you got a long face and, ooh, that stomach's loud. I think you're hungry. And he's like, oh, Jughead, I'm starving. I don't have enough money for the vending machine. And Jughead's like, yikes, what a tragedy. Now, as I'm reading these now, I am hearing Cole Sprouse's voice as Jughead.
As Jughead, yeah.
I see everything he does, the cadence in his voice. I'm reading that now. So that shows you that young man has done a great job making that character his own. And he pulls out a dollar, and Moose is like, oh, it's a miracle. And he says, well, I can't just give any dollar away, but I would be willing to part with it for a trade. And he's like, oh, a trade, anything. He goes, well, I got to admit, I've seen you eating those spaghetti and meatball sandwiches that your mom makes, and here's the deal. I'll give you this dollar if you promise to give me your mom's spaghetti and meatball sandwiches for a week. And he's like, it's a deal. And then he stops and goes, wait, but if I do that, then what am I going to eat? And he goes, well, you're going to eat candy from the vending machine, thanks to me. And Moose is like, yeah, you're right. But wait a minute. And now Jughead is obviously trying to trick him into doing this. And Moose, every couple steps, seems to be falling for it. And he's like, well, but that's for today. And he goes, I know. How lucky are you? I have to wait all next week to get you one of your sandwiches. And Moose is like, you're right. It's a deal. I can get the food now. So he pops it in. He throws it in the machine, and it spits it back out. He starts rubbing it on the side to straighten it out, crinkles it out, brings it to the weight room, drops a weight on it, throws it on a burger, on a grill to try to cook it up a little bit, to give it a little bit of a grip. And he finally brings it back to the vending machine. It doesn't take it. And he's upset, and he hits the machine, and the machine falls down and crashes, and stuff's all sticking out. And he looks and goes, yes. So now we see later that night, Midge is very upset in a restaurant, drinking her soda. And the waitress comes up and says, can I get you guys something to eat tonight? And Moose is sitting there with chocolate and chips all over his shirt. And he's like, nothing for me, thanks. I'm starved. So maybe we should just skip to dessert. And that's how that ends. The next story is Have It All, where you get a great story of Moose. It's written by Sean Cady. Thomas Patelli does the art, where Moose is really just trying to juggle everything in his life. He's trying to juggle school, which he's struggling with because he's got a test coming up. If he doesn't do well, he may get taken off the football team. You've got his coach who's sitting there telling him, hey, you know, one of the star players got hurt, so you're going to have to be the one to do all of the extra heavy lifting on Friday night's game. And I hope you can help us out with that. And he's like, yep, I'll do it. I'll do whatever it takes. It's Midge and Moose's anniversary, so they're looking to go out and do something special. And then he starts working with Dilton a little bit. And Dilton's like, look, you know, I can help you with something. And then, you know, he's going to do some work. And then all of a sudden, Reggie comes in, and Reggie is trying to sell some papers for him. He's like, you know, but Dilton was going to help Moose, but Reggie stole the notebook. And he goes over, he grabs him, lifts him up by his shirt and says, where's the notebook? He said, it's all in my bag. He's like, okay, good. He goes, lucky, I'm not going to beat you. So he goes over, he works with Dilton. He gets a good grade on the test. Then he brings Midge out for a beautiful picnic. And then he has the coach come out and says, hey, you know what? I see that I've been kind of working you a little too hard, and I'm really sorry about that. But you know what? If you don't feel you're comfortable changing positions, and you know what it's like, Brian, to, you know, I guess Moose is on the offensive line, but if you have to change positions on the O line, it's not, every position isn't interchangeable.
Correct.
There's whole different schemes. Like if you're on the left, you're kind of, you might be protecting the quarterback's blind side, depending what side they throw from. You have others that are, you know, the center snaps the ball, but has to take on that first guy coming in. You've got everybody that has things, and Moose agreed to do whatever needed to be done. So he was going to play all the different lines on the O, and he's getting a little panicky about that. And coach is like, look, you know what? I'm really sorry I did that. Whatever you need to do, whatever you want to be comfortable doing, I'll help you. And he goes, hey, you know what? I'll do whatever you need because I did everything today. I got my test done. Everything's done. And you see Moose just taking on every position, doing really good. And at the end of the game, Moose is sleeping on the bench as they are all congratulating each other on a great game. And then the last story is The Big Difference by Gorf, writer, and Ryan Jampol is the artist. And it's a story about Moose meeting a young kid and who can't walk. He's got braces on his legs. And Moose befriends him, helps him out. They develop a really strong friendship. They help each other in wrestling because this kid wants to be a wrestler. Moose is kind of taking it easy on him because he doesn't want to hurt him. And the kid's like, look, I may have a disability, but I want to wrestle. So if you're going to take it easy on me, you're not helping me at all. So then Moose really works on him, and the kid ends up taking him down. They develop a great friendship. And that is how that ends. So a great issue. You get three different colors. Thomas Patelli, Corey Smith, and Wilfredo Torres does the covers. I got the Wilfredo Moose and Midge kissing cover. But a great, great, great book. Again, loving everything that Archie is doing. And you can always go to archiecomics.com, go to the Archie app, and get all the books that we are talking about there.
All right, Matthew, we're going to take a little jaunt over to the DC universe right now and talk about Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 9. Now, this is one of the books that has gone to $3.99.
I've got three of them so far.
Mm. And it is also the first wave of books that has the free digital comic inside. Now, I believe that you are getting a free digital copy of the same book that you are buying.
I
believe that DC has adopted what Marvel used to do, and Marvel got away from doing that, but I think Marvel's going back to that, is what we read recently, I believe. But in any case, the book's now $3.99. This is one of the once-a-month books, correct? That's the whole thing, is they're basically trying to say that the $3.99 books are the monthlies and the $2.99 ones are the twice-monthlies.
Yes.
That's pretty much their strategy right now, if I'm not mistaken. And what we've been seeing happen in this book is that there is a new Oracle. They have a new kid, basically, that is working for the Birds of Prey that is calling himself Oracle and has sort of taken on that moniker. And you have the current storyline involves a woman by the name of Blackbird, and she is allegedly basically taking in people with powers and training them to be even more lethal and more powerful than they were before, but demanding outrageous things from them. Like, they fought in the first issue of this arc, they were fighting a villain named Gemini, and her whole thing was like she was like Elongated Man. She could turn all, you know, flexible and stuff like that. But when they ran into her, she had shape-shifting powers. And it was because she had like leveled up her powers through working with this Blackbird person. But in exchange for doing that, she had to like go and kill all the people that she used to have a connection to. And so the Birds of Prey are trying to figure out, who is this person? Why is she having people do all these heinous things? And how is she helping them like bring their powers to the next level? So you have Black Canary, who says, well, I'll figure it out by going undercover. I know that there is, they sort of get a lead that this person has been recruiting from this underground fight club. So Black Canary says, well, I'll go and kick some butt in the fight club and get her to notice me, and then I will end up figuring out what her operation's all about. And that's in fact what she does. And you see that this Blackbird woman goes to Roulette, who is a character that I think we saw in Supergirl. I'm not mistaken.
She's the one who has that underground fight
club
thing.
Right, and she runs the underground fight club. And so Blackbird basically pays Roulette to scout fighters for her. And Roulette says, well, I have someone now who seems like they're pretty amazing out there, and you can go check her out. And so Blackbird says, okay, so I want to put my fighter up against her and see what she can really do. And now we cut to the ring where Black Canary is putting a beat down on a guy who she's calling Chewy, but he's like a werewolf kind of guy. Just putting an absolute beat down on him and takes him down. And then Blackbird's fighter is called Osmium. And he comes out and he almost looks like a Metallo type of guy. And so Black Canary goes toe-to-toe with him, and she ends up using her canary cry to take him down. And when she does, all of a sudden the guy on the mat morphs into Blackbird, and she says, oh, I'm really impressed by your talents here. I see that you've got this whole canary cry thing going on. What if I told you that I could help you take your talents to a completely new level? Would you be interested? And of course, Black Canary is like, oh, absolutely. Where should I follow you to? So she ends up taking her to this, I don't know, like this almost like a group home that she's running, where she has three other kids in their 20s that have powers of different. One has a flame power, one has a power where they can sort of control these little balls of force, and another one who has like mind control powers. And they're all studying with this woman, Blackbird. And her whole thing is, look, we've let humans push us around for long enough. As metahumans, we should be able to take what we want. I'm going to teach you to level up your powers so that you can take whatever belongs to you. You know, for the guy, Owen, I think his name is, that has the mind control ability. You know, you're going to be able to talk your way into any hotel that you want. You're going to be able to get whatever you want to get. You know, and she's basically saying, this is what I'm going to do for you. And so as they're going around kind of talking about their powers, you see them each sort of demonstrate them. And then she's making these big promises, and she gets to Black Canary and she says, I want you to show me what you can do. And so Black Canary, there's a pedestal with an apple on top of it. And she's like, well, you know, go ahead, show me what you can do. And she uses her canary cry and it knocks the apple flying. And she says, that looks okay, but what if you could basically break it down on a molecular level? Like, what if you could absolutely destroy it, like, from the inside? Mm. What would that be? And she's like, oh, okay, I don't think I could do that. But you see day three, day four, day five, she's practicing. Sure enough, she steps up to it, you know, on day nine, and she basically just absolutely explodes this apple with her voice. And she's like, holy crap, this lady's actually teaching me something. So she's kind of starting to feel like she's learning stuff here. And then the blackbird says to her, now I want to teach you to fly. And she's like, lady, that's not one of my powers. And Blackbird says, well, if you direct your canary cry at the ground, it's going to cause force to push you up in the air. And if you practice enough, you'll be able to do that. And of course, she doesn't believe her with that either. Lo and behold, a couple days later, she's able to do that. So she's been training with these people, and she doesn't really understand what, other than the woman's kind of attitude about how metahumans are superior, she's like, I don't know. Like, I haven't figured out what's the evil stuff that she's doing. Well, one night she's kind of skulking around the hallways after dark, and she sees that one of the young women who had the firepower is in meeting with Blackbird, and the girl saying, you know, thank you so much for everything you've done for me. And Blackbird saying, yeah, basically when you came to me, you could light candles, and now you have this great firepower. And, you know, and she says, I'm forever grateful. I owe you my life. And she says, well, you can keep your life, but as a repayment, I'll take your powers. And she puts her hand on the woman and sucks her powers out of her. So that's what she's doing, is she is teaching these people to use their powers to the absolute utmost of their ability. And then when those powers have fully manifested, she's stealing them from them. And they revert back to humans with no powers at all. So they lose them all. They lose everything. And so now that Black Canary kind of saw that happening, she runs into this Owen kid's room and says, look, you have to believe me. Blackbird is taking people's powers. She just did it to the girl down the hall. We have to figure out how to stop her. And Owen is saying, that doesn't sound like her. She's been nothing but great to me. And it turns out that Owen has a similar backstory to Black Canary. Lived on the streets, didn't have people to trust, finally found someone that they could put their trust in. And Black Canary is explaining to him, look, I had a life like you. And trust me, there are good people out there who are going to come along and they're going to offer you a helping hand when you need it, but you can't trust everybody and you can't trust this woman because she does not have your best interests at heart. So he says, well, if you're right, we have to take her down, but I don't want to see anything happen to you. So he uses his mind control power on Black Canary and says, you're going to wait here and you're going to count to 100 and I'm going to go confront her myself. And sure enough, he goes to do that, and Black Canary can't do anything but sit on the bed and count to 100. And when he does that, as you might imagine, he runs into Blackbird, and when he tries to use his power on her, turns out she already absorbed the powers of someone who is immune to mind control. So she can't be mind controlled. And she then steals his power. So after counting to 100, Black Canary gets up and runs into the room, only to find that Blackbird can now control her as well. And she is going to turn her against the birds of prey. And meanwhile, we now cut over to the Birds of Prey, where you have Huntress and Batgirl who are out looking for leads because they haven't heard from Black Canary in a few days. And they end up running into this Gemini woman who had her powers taken from Blackbird, and she explains to them what's going on. Green Arrow shows up because he wants to help because he doesn't know what's been going on with Black Canary. And then they end up calling in Nightwing as well. So as it leads into the next issue, you're going to have Huntress, Batgirl, Green Arrow, Nightwing teaming up to go and find Black Canary. So pretty cool issue of this series. This is a two-issue arc so far, and it looks like it's going to end up being a three-issue arc. This is written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson. The artist here is Rose Antonio. The colors are Alan Pasquala, and Josh Reed does the letters here. And the editor on this one is Chris Conroy. Dave Wheelgaz is the assistant editor. So Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, this was one of those books that when they announced that some of the books were going to be going up to $3.99, I was like, oh, well, there's going to be a culling because I'm not going to keep buying all of these DC books that I'm buying if they all jump up to $3.99. This is one that I think for now is staying on the pull list because it's been interesting. I think the dynamic has been well developed so far between the teammates, and each of them is getting their own time. Like the last arc, you saw Huntress get her sort of time in the spotlight with some stuff that was going on with her mother. You know, before that, you saw Barbara trying to figure out who this new Oracle is. And so you're seeing each of them getting their time in the spotlight. And then you have cameos from these other heroes in the DC universe. But the cool thing, Matthew, I can say for the first time with our DC books here is that I have a code.
Wow.
I have a code to give out to our listeners. So if you are near your computer or your mobile phone or whatever, and you go to dccomics.com/redeem.
They're keeping it simple.
And you enter the following code first, you will get a copy of Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 9. And the code is DC0171NYWDT8B. That is your code. Go to dccomics.com/redeem. If you're the first one to enter that, you will get a copy of Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 9, which is a book that is definitely worth picking up.
Very nice. Now, we are going to finish up the new books with a timely book because as the weekend approaches, the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is being released.
Yes.
It's going to be showing tonight as we're recording this and hitting theaters full force on Friday. And Rocket Raccoon is one of the only books I'm reading out of the Marvel Universe right now. This is the third issue. It is written by Matthew Rosenberg. Jorge Coelho is the artist. Antonio Fabella is the colorist. Jeff Ekrobe is the letterer. And our good friend, David Nakayama, did the cover.
Awesome.
We haven't spoken to David in a dog's age, so good to see David.
Of Big Hero 6 fame.
Big Hero 6 fame. Great to see David doing some work. And that is an awesome cover. It's not like it's a... That is not throwaway. That is a beautiful cover.
First of all, any cover that has Kraven on it,
yep,
is a cover that I want to own.
You've got Kraven wearing his orange. You've got Rocket wearing his orange and an orange background. And I think it just looks great.
They kind of play with that a little bit. It's cool.
A lot of fun. So as what has been going on in the first two issues, Rocket is trapped on Earth trying to get out, running into all sorts of craziness, ran into a few aliens that he thought could help him out. And as he finally starts to get his way out of where he is, lo and behold, Kraven the Hunter is on the hunt looking for him. And it has been just insane. So this is where we're picking up right now. And Kraven is telling him, I finally got you. Nobody escapes Kraven the Hunter. And then out of nowhere, Rocket jumps on his head and starts biting his neck. Kraven's circling around, flipping him all over the place, finally gets a hold of him and whips him. And he says, I told you the last time we met, you're really tough for a raccoon. And then you see where he hits the wall and there's a spot of blood and it's trickling down because he hit the wall and slid down. He says, but you're still just a raccoon. And Rocket's like, I'll show you who a effing blankety blank 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 raccoon is.
So this is the kid's version of Rocket Raccoon. Okay, yeah.
He gets up, starts kicking the crap out of him. And it's all squiggly squared. So, you're not getting any swearing. So he goes up there, he starts fighting him, and you just got a great fight scene going on. They're fighting in a old abandoned warehouse or something, and Rocket gets he jumps over on a shelf, and then the shelf falls on top of Kraven. He's underneath it, and it's giving Rocket a break to kind of get out, and he's like, I'm not done yet, raccoon. And he's like, oh, for freaking crap, or what do you say, for flack's sake. He says that, and then Kraven pulls out a gun, starts shooting him. I didn't know Kraven used a gun.
I know he has used a gun, but I didn't think it was one of his normal – but then again, he is going up against Rocket Raccoon, yep, who he knows uses guns on a frequent basis.
So – and that comes into play, the gun thing in here, all just a ton. So Rocket is running out of this abandoned building going, you know what? This whole planet is full of – and before he could even finish, he gets run over by a guy on a bike. He's like, whoa, what the heck are you? He goes, I'm Rocket. Where are you? And he goes, yeah, you know what? Don't even answer me because I don't care. I'm sick of this Earth. I'm sick of this place, but I need some help. He goes, you know where the superheroes live? I need to find A-Head or the Knife Hands or whoever. And he goes, behind you. And he goes, what do you mean behind you? And he turns around and a truck driven by Kraven. It's like Kraven's truck. He drives around in a truck that has Kraven the Hunter logos all over it. Hits him. He's stuck to the front of it. And he is driving, and then Rocket wakes up, and he's now in the back of this van with 8 or 9 other aliens that have been captured. And they're talking about the fact that, you know, we were just normal people living here. Kraven came after us, and he took us. And he says, the alien kill crew, they just took us away. And we're just normal people. So Rocket is trying to work his way out of his binds. He finally gets out, and Kraven is up there driving. And he's singing along to the radio, and then Rocket jumps over, beats up, and it's a kidnap van. It's those old panel vans that he's driving. The van does this like triple flip on the floor. Everybody escapes. He starts running out, and then Rocket is laying there on the floor, and these cops are down there, and they've got their guns drawn on him, and they're like, you got to freeze. He's like, look, who are you? And he goes, don't worry, guys. I'm one of the X-Men. And then you see them all cock their guns back. And he goes, Avengers. I'm one of the Avengers. And they're like, all right, well, which one are you? And he goes, I'm Raccoon Man. And the cop's like, one of them goes, well, I've never heard of Raccoon Man. He goes, look, there's a ton of those guys that we've never even heard of. So, you know, remember Machine Man? And they're like, oh, my God, yeah, Machine Man. He was crazy. Do you remember? And then they start going on. Do you remember when Star Fox was on the team? And he's like, oh, my gosh, are you guys for real? So he's like, look, you know, they're all my teammates. Please, I just need to get out of here. And then all of a sudden, Kraven shows up. They start to grab Rocket, and Kraven grabs the cops, bonks a couple of their heads together. Rocket grabs the gun from one of the cops, and he shoots at the cop car. And all it does is, like, put a couple holes in the cop car. And he goes, for a planet that loves guns so much, they sure have really crappy ones. Raccoon escapes, runs across the street, and he's going through all the places like you're seeing in New York, like running through Central Park, running by a hot dog stand, and you see Kraven getting a hot dog. Now he's on the subway checking blood, and he's looking around. He sees in a manhole, and he starts walking through, and then finally gets a smell, finds Rocket. Rocket escapes as he's dragging him out. And he jumps on a ferry, and as he's laying on the ferry, these people are like, oh, my gosh, what's going on? What are you doing? He's like, well, I'm on this boat. I'm getting away from this guy. Where are we going? And they're like, Staten Island. He goes, oh, that sounds really nice. I'm going to take a little bit of a nap. So as he's on that, people are now – like he falls asleep. People are taking selfies with Rocket, doing all sorts of stuff. And he's like, oh, I'm up. What's that noise? And it's a big honking of a ship. He's like, oh, it's an oil tanker. And they're like, but why is it honking? And Rocket grabs a pair of binoculars, looks up, and sees that you've got Kraven that has now killed all the crew and is chasing him in this oil tanker. And then he grabs a gun.
Kraven will use whatever he needs to use, yes. Man.
So Rocket sees a gun. He grabs the gun, and he's like, and it's a huge-looking thing. He's like, oh, finally, a real weapon. And it's a flare gun. He shoots it at the boat. You see the flare go up, tink off the boat. And he goes, why do these people make guns that suck so much here? And then you turn the page and you see that this oil tanker is now smashing into the ferry that he's on. And that is where this issue ends. And three issues in, I've got the fourth one upstairs. It's just been a lot of fun. That's what I want out of something like this. You just want fun. You don't care about anything.
Do they explain why Kraven is hunting him?
He is just trying to scoop up aliens.
Okay.
Like that's part of his thing. The Alien Kill Club is something that he's doing. So I do have a digital code. And this digital code will be good for either Deadpool Back in Black trade, Doctor Strange Volume 3, or Wolverine versus Deadpool trade. So I guess you get free digital copies of the first issues in. So you get a few of each of those.
Right. It's like a sampler.
That's what you get. So marvel.com/redeem. Your code is R-M-H. That is your code.
You did pretty good with it.
They're still too small. I know my eyes suck, but they're still too small.
Oh, wait till you see the DC ones. They're even smaller.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
They're even smaller. But the same exact, they must use like the same process.
Yeah.
Because they're hard to rip off and it's easy to ruin them. So, which I think is part of their shtick.
Try to get a 5.5 now or 5.0 graded book.
Right, exactly. All right, Matthew, now we're going to go to our Out of the Long Box this week, and it's a book that we've talked about in a couple of different ways over the past few weeks, and that is Warlock 5. When I knew that I was going to be interviewing Jeffrey Edwards, who is the artist on the new series that Cullen Bunn and Jimmy Johnston are writing, I went on eBay, and I decided I'm just going to see. Because I had done a little research. Now, this was put out by Aircell Comics in the 80s, which is a Canadian company that is no longer around. And there was a limited run, I think, of 22 issues in the first volume. And then they did like 7 or 9 issues in the second one. So I said, well, let's look at this first run. And sometimes I like to go on eBay and just see if a complete run of anything is on there.
You like the runs.
I very rarely buy books that are not a complete run. Like sometimes if we're talking about a 10-cent bin, maybe. But even when we go there, I always look for runs. Like I want story arcs or yes. An entire series of whatever. And even if it's a terrible comic, I will buy a series if yes. It's a whole run. Mm-hmm. Like the best way to get me to buy your garbage comic books.
Have them all. Yep.
If you have them all, you've already half sold them to me. I don't need that much more of a push. Now, the great thing about this is not only did I find the entire series, but in fact, it's awesome.
Cool.
So, and the cool thing is, for the first several comics of this run, Warlock 5 had these like painted covers, and I'll show it to you. But, you know, as we talked about before, the premise of this is that there is sort of a grid where realities intersect. And there is a guardian from each of these five different parallel universes that is sort of the protector of that universe, or the, you know, the cosmic being of that universe. And what's happened is because they're intersecting and they all know about one another, they're constantly like trying to conquer each other's dimensions and all of reality. And so because some of them are very much greedy and they want the power over the grid all to themselves. And as we start this book, we have what is sort of a sword and sorcery beginning. You have in this castle looking place, you have a sorcerer who is saying, "Fires of chaos pour from my mind, open the gateway to Dumador's time, and flame and fresh blood I offer to thee, let my lord's legions cross over to me." So you see that this sorcerer, whose name I believe is Morbid, and the lord of his, who is named Dumador is one of the five sort of guardians of different realities, they are summoning in the warriors from their own world into like our world in order to wage battle with one of the other guardians. And he's saying, you know, the whole universe is going to kneel before me after we take out, you know, these guys. And so he summons all these warriors in, and then boom, elevator door opens and you see that he's in like our world. So they're walking through a subway station and he's got this small army with him. Elsewhere in the city, you see a room full of computers where someone is sitting down at a desk, and it looks like a guy, but he's using some sort of teleportation machine to teleport in all of these machines, all of these like cyborgs. And you see this guy get up from his seat and he goes over to address them, and he pulls off what we see to be a mask, and you see that he looks like a Terminator style robot underneath. And they're saying, "Victory to the new order, power to Argon." So Argon is this second guy that we see now of the five, and the two of them are going to have a showdown, Argon and Dumador. So you've got like Terminator time and you've got like Excalibur time smashing together in our world. So now we cut over to another place in the city, and you see this very nice house, this very old house, where you have two of the other guardians. One of them is named Savishtar, and the other one is named Tanith. Now, Tanith is like a sorceress herself, but a good one. She's like the good witch. Then you have Savishtar, who is this dragon who can take the form of a human. So now we have four of them. And these two have formed an alliance, and they're saying, "Look, we have to stop these other morons from fighting with each other, because they're going to destroy all of reality if we don't." And so they're actually celebrating, because it's been like 3 weeks since the last outburst of them fighting with one another. And as soon as she says that, she gets like a magical, you know, alert that it's happening again. So the two of them jump in a car, and the car is being driven by this burly looking sort of limo driver, and come to find out he is a barbarian from Tanith's time that she brought into this world. So they're driving to the scene, to this underground parking garage by the subway station. And as they drive in there, then you see this A-team van pulling up, and we meet the fifth guardian. Her name is Zania, and she is this like anarchist from a future. She's like a Mad Max style warrior who can summon, and she's a necromancer, so she can summon zombies too. So she shows up in her van and she's like, "Well, we'll go in a few minutes after these guys start fighting and we'll destroy all of them." So now you see that three of the five are all in it for themselves, and really only two of them are in it to try to keep the peace. So the next thing you have over the next like 15 pages is you have this Dumador and his, you know, knights storming the army of Argon, who is the Terminator style robot. And so you have these beautiful pages. And I should have mentioned this at the front, but Gordon Derry is the writer of this, and Dennis Beauvais is the artist. And the art is black and white, but it is so amazingly
cool, grayscale colored.
It's absolutely beautiful. And the battles that are happening, he does this amazing job of showing the clash between the past and the future. You've got lightning, you've got fire, you've got laser beams bouncing off of knights' shields and stuff like that. And it all looks amazing. Like every single one of these panels, and Jeffrey Edwards and I were talking about this because, of course, he researched this book in order to be drawing the new installment of it. And he said, going back, like, it must have taken him forever to draw each and every one of these panels, because every single one is like its own fully fleshed out piece of artwork. Like, it's absolutely incredible. So you have, just imagine, like, it reminds me of like a Saturday matinee movie where they just threw like every 80s genre in a blender,
yeah,
and threw them all together. It was like an excuse of like, how can we get like the Lord of the Rings and the Terminator and Mad Max and Night of the Living Dead and all of this stuff in one thing? We'll have it be multiple realities, and there's sort of supposed to be a guardian in charge of each one of these realities, and they're all fighting with one another. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this book is. So this huge battle takes place where you see the robots and the knights going at it. Then Savishtar, who is a dragon, says, I'll stop this. I'll get in the middle of this. And he turns into a dragon and starts frying everyone with his fire. And the flames in this are just absolutely amazingly rendered. And so he jumps into the middle of it. The barbarian jumps in to protect Tanith, the sorceress, and he ends up getting killed. And that's when we find out that he was like her lover that she brought out of her own time here, but she ended up getting him killed because everyone around her ends up getting killed. And she's kind of lamenting that. So the fight ends up coming into like a stalemate once Savishtar gets involved. Once the dragon shows up,
it's all over.
Everybody sort of heads for the hills and everything sort of calms down. So the two factions sort of leave and go their separate ways to fight another day. And now these two are left sort of picking up the pieces. So she's got her dead lover. You've got bodies all over the place. So the dragon just burns everything and clears out the whole area in order to hide the fact that there was a battle happening. And so they get back in their car and they're like, oh, I can't believe these guys are still fighting. Don't they know that the only way that we're going to protect all of reality is if we band together and blah, 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 blah. But at least we were able to end this, you know, without too many other casualties. And they're kind of driving up out of the parking garage. And as they drive up out of the parking garage, you've got Zania, the necromancer anarchist, who is sitting there with her zombies, and they're getting ready to fire upon them as they pull out of the parking garage. So they're out of one situation and right into another situation there. And that's the way the first issue of this ends. This book is insane because in the next issue of it, you actually get to see like this Zania woman who goes back to like an abandoned church where she's playing the organ and doing sorcery to summon zombies and stuff like that. Like, it just keeps getting crazier. And I'm about 7 or 8 issues in to this initial run. And the artwork is superb. Mm. And the book itself is like a mashup of every 80s movie that I watched when I was a kid. And it's freaking amazing. And it came out in the 80s. So it like was pulling from everything. Yeah. And it's just, it's the kind of stuff that you do with your G.I. Joes and your Transformers in the sandbox where you throw everything together. That's what this is, but it works. Mm. And one of the reasons that it works is that the artwork is so amazing. It's like a joy to look at. Like, I can't – again, I was talking to Jeffrey Edwards just about like bringing some of that stuff to life and doing some homages to some of the panels and some of the specific things in this book with the new volume that's coming out through Ragnarok. I just can't wait to see the new stuff because this series is great. And again, Cullen Bunn was talking about how this was a series that really influenced him. And I can totally see that.
Yeah.
This feels like a series that was tailor-made for like fans of John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it reminds me of. So definitely, definitely worth checking out. Like I said, I got the whole run of 22 issues and I even got volume 2 on eBay and there were other complete runs on there. So it's definitely worth tracking down if you can. I don't know if we'll see the old series come back at least digitally because the new one's going to be coming out. But again, if you haven't checked out the Kickstarter, you can follow the link in the show notes to check that out and see some of the new stuff that Jeffrey Edwards is drawing for it. But even if you just go back and get the back issues, really, really cool stuff. So Warlock 5 from Aircell Comics, definitely an awesome book and worth checking out.
Very nice.
So there you go. That is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to wrap it up for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethrucomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.